This is Take Care, a health and wellness show produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Jason Smith.
And I'm Catherine Loper.
We turn now to a troublesome health disparity dealing with lifespan. Dr. Dhruv Kular is with us to share some of the research behind this finding and how we can turn the trend around. He's an attending physician at New York Presbyterian Hospital and a researcher at the Weill Cornell Department of Healthcare Policy and Research. Here's producer Mark Lavonier.
Thanks a lot for being with us, Dr. Kular.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you wrote a piece in the New York Times earlier this year about a troublesome health disparity. You wrote that Americans with depression, bipolar disorder, and other serious mental illnesses die 15 to 30 years younger than those without mental illness. Could you explain these findings?
Sure. You know, I think a lot of times these types of statistics jump out at you. But what really, you know, motivated me to write this article was the experience that I was having with a lot of patients that I cared for in the hospitals or in the clinic. And I noticed how much more difficult it was at times to concentrate on a lot of the physical issues that they were having, the physical illnesses, and how mental illness often contributes to those physical symptoms. And so it became apparent that in order to treat someone's physical illnesses, it's also important to treat their mental illnesses. And one of the stark disparities that we've seen in the research is that people with serious mental illnesses, things like depression, bipolar disorder, severe anxiety, they do have life expectancies that are sometimes 15 and 30 years shorter than people without mental illness. And that is a disparity that is larger than the disparities that we see by race or ethnicity or even socioeconomic status. So it's a really important issue, and I was hoping to bring some attention to it by writing this article.
So in some scenarios, people might correlate these early deaths with the person's mental state directly. Maybe one would make the assumption that it was an accident or that they were grappling with addiction or other demons that led to their death. Could you tell us why this might not be the case?
That's right. And so I think we generally think about mental illness and the reasons for early death as things like addiction or suicide. But actually, the most common reason that people die early from mental disease is actually the same as everyone else: chronic diseases. So things like respiratory problems, cancer, heart disease, stroke. So people with mental illness are much more likely to die from chronic disease than accidents or suicides. And so that really is the dominant reason that that we see this disparity. And that is what we need to focus on if we're going to try to close the gap.
This reminds me of a story I had a friend tell me a few years ago. She was having what she later found out to be anxiety attacks. She took herself to her physician and they ordered a full workup on her. And all the results came back and the doctor had said to them, well, you're anatomically fine. What do you think this might be? And she said, I think it might be anxiety and maybe I should see a therapist. And then she mentioned to me that she was looked at like she had three heads all of a sudden. And I'm wondering, that can't be an isolated case. Why would medical professionals treat patients with mental illness maybe a bit differently than those without?
Yeah, so, you know, unfortunately, there is still a lot of stigma that's associated with mental illness in the general public, but that's also true within the medical profession and within healthcare. And so stigma is still a reason that a lot of people either don't come forward or aren't treated as effectively as they could be. Beyond that, there's a few kind of biases that can bleed into the way that we think about treating people who have mental health problems. The first is this idea that I talk about in the article. It's called therapeutic pessimism. So sometimes clinicians, when they see someone with a serious mental illness, they may be doubtful about their ability to get better. And that can lead to a kind of passivity, which entails not ordering certain tests or treatments. And it means that maybe patients miss out on that type of treatment. The second is this idea of diagnostic overshadowing. And so when doctors know that patients have mental illness, sometimes they attribute their physical symptoms to their mental illness. So if a doctor knows that a patient has depression, for example, they might think that a headache or abdominal pain is actually due to mental health problems as opposed to something that is physically in their body. And so these types of biases can also affect the way that we think about caring for patients who have mental illness.
Does this discrepancy indicate anything about, let's say, healthcare and our collective perception of mental illness, and not just in the health industry? I mean, what's that bigger picture for you from your standpoint?
You know, we see broadly in society that there is still, as I mentioned, a lot of stigma that's associated with behavioral health problems and mental health problems. And so that certainly contributes to the way that people with mental illness are cared for. But the other issue is that we haven't redesigned our medical care in the way that we have for physical health problems. And so, for instance, patients who have heart failure or who have emphysema, after they leave the hospital, it's recommended that they see their primary care doctor or a specialized clinic within 1 week or within 10 days. For people with severe mental health problems, that's often not an option. We haven't made the effort to make sure that they can see a mental health professional within a week or 10 days, and they often go months without seeing someone in the mental health field, or sometimes they don't see anyone at all.
Could this fact with someone's mental illness, let's say they are cognizant that they have it or it is holding them back, do you think that leads people to put up that shield, not to even disclose that in the first place to their doctor?
It certainly can. I think a lot of people who struggle with that mental illness grapple with the extent to which they should admit it to themselves or talk about it with loved ones, and certainly with people that they don't know. And part of going to a doctor is developing that trust with a doctor so that you're able to come forward with what's going on both physically and mentally. But unfortunately, I think still a lot of people who have mental health problems don't feel that trust and don't feel like their mental health problems would be something that they can talk about with their clinicians, with their doctors, with their nurses. And that's a real problem. We have to develop a more open healthcare system that allows people to come forward when they're having these types of symptoms.
So in your observation, what's being done so far to help combat this?
You know, there's a lot more training among medical students and residents on how to treat people who have mental health problems, how to incorporate that into the way that we care for their chronic diseases, which are mostly physical diseases, but recognizing that in order to care for people effectively who have mental health problems, that has to be part of the treatment plan going forward. Another big thing that's happening is people are trying to integrate behavioral health services into primary care clinics. So before, often when people had both medical and mental health problems, they would go to their primary care doctor and get their physical care taken care of, but then be referred to a behavioral health specialist or a psychiatrist outside of the clinic. Now there's a big push to bring those behavioral health specialists, those mental health professionals, right into the primary care clinic. And I think that could really do a lot of good.
I noticed something that you retweeted recently, and that is a sign, presumably in a doctor's office, and it was titled "Advice from a Patient." Does that sound familiar?
I think so. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it said things like, this may be a normal day at work for you, but it's a big day in my life, and even I'm not used to being naked around strangers. What sort of indirect or direct advice have you picked up from patients with a mental illness that you could maybe add to that list?
I think the big thing to recognize is that we don't know what it's like often, or we forget what it's like to be ill when we're caring for patients. I think it's very easy to go through your day when you're seeing 5, 10, 15, 20 patients and think about it as just a job and you're checking off boxes and you're making your way through your day. But for every patient, that is their life and that is their experience. And so we need to respect and we need to honor that. And one of the things that I found poignant about that tweet and why I decided to retweet it was this idea of always remembering, always hearkening back that for this patient, that is a really important moment in their lives. It's a time that people are often fearful. People are uncertain about what's going on. And we need to make the extra effort with all patients, but particularly with patients who have mental health problems to make sure that they feel welcome and that they feel cared for.
Dr. Dhruv Kular, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.